And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The cliché self-awareness threshold in football circles. A local radio co-commentator witnessing a goal being scored in football for the very first time. The best Rolls-Roycing so far by a long chalk. The most obscure footballing union on record. Tyler versus Drury, the bake-off. Singular Premier League nicknames. The threshold for an end-of-season pipping. John Murray's gets the shot away moment. An unprecedented way of saying nil-nil. And Richard Keys has got a brand new punch bag. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 238 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me on the adjudication panel is David Walker. How is it going?
Yeah, it's going very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Morale has recovered somewhat since Leeds, which I thought we did a manful job of getting through despite the technological issues.
Indeed, yes. For anyone who is listening, who is at the Leeds show and who hasn't seen our variety of thanks/apologies to the audience on Twitter in the last few days, we should say thank you very much for being so generous as we went on stage and discovered 5 minutes into the show that the sound wasn't working and almost half of the show was rendered instantly unusable. But we, as you said, carried on manfully and I think everyone had a nice time.
Yeah, we just had just about enough content left. But that doesn't mean we aren't going to recycle it for our podcast. Let me reassure the listeners of that. If anyone was seeking an explanation for what happened, I guess the only person to turn to really is this man.
Why?
No idea. Absolutely no idea.
You know the answer.
So there we go. No closer to the truth. No one will ever know. But it's definitely not my fault. And that's the main thing. So disgusted am I that I have rather harshly dropped Charlie Eccleshare from the adjudication panel today and drafted in Nick Miller. How's it going, Nick Miller?
I feel like whoever, I can't remember who it was, but whoever came in for Alan Shearer when Rude Hullet.
Paul Robinson.
Paul Robinson, there you go. Good knowledge. If it is any consolation about the lead show, my mate Al. Hello, Al. Was there and had a very lovely evening. So despite the technical woe, I think people enjoyed the show nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overstate actually. And thanks, Al. Appreciate that. And everyone we drank with until the wee hours in Leeds seemed to be of a similar mind. It wasn't a debacle, Dave. It wasn't even a horror show, actually. It wasn't... It was fine.
Yeah, I'd like to move on from it now, actually.
Fair enough. You know, sometimes we worry that the Football Clichés podcast is just picking on people, really. You know, innocent misusers of the language of football. But, you know, football, Nick, is more self-aware of its clichés than we might give it credit for.
You know, if there's ever that horrible cliché of game of two halves, then that was it, you know.
I know it's a cliché, but it's true.
I know it's an old cliché, but
there's no easy games.
So we take each game as it comes.
Take each game as it comes, the old cliché.
It's an old cliché, but people talk about the 12th man.
You know, it's a cliché, but form goes out the window in the derby.
It's an old cliché, but every game's a cup final.
I know it's a cliché, but it's a final now.
We win ugly, I know it's an old cliché, that, but
the most important thing today was that we got the 3 points. It sounds cliché, but
it's a cliché, but that was a goal worthy of winning any tie, wasn't it?
It's very important to win these type of games.
It's a bit of a cliché, but
sounds very cliché, maybe, but
it is really what dreams are made of.
Gary Pallister, if ever there was a game with two halves, it was that one.
Yeah, definitely it's the old cliché, isn't it?
I know it's a cliché, but over the moon. Baking a cake is easy.
Brian's gun exclusive on the Football Clichés podcast, the tie-in that everybody was hoping for, thanks to Brian's gun. His name's Will, by the way. Did you know that? Nick, based on that evidence that I presented you with, I mean, there is a certain ceiling to football people's self-awareness. I feel like there are only a certain set of things that qualify to be prefaced with, I know it's a cliché, but...
Yeah, I wonder how many times you have to say one of those clichés before you interject with, it's a cliché. Yeah, there must be a kind of smidgen of self-awareness there, but it must build up over time.
I think there are two things at play, Dave, here. One, if it's a very, very obvious sort of repetitive sentiment, like the boys gave everything or something like that, but I also think it's kind of a contextual thing. If it's in the act of fronting up where they're sort of digging around for sentiments, I feel like they have an extra layer of, oh God, they're going to catch me out here and they're going to accuse me of being cliched. So maybe that's an aspect to it.
There's more variety in that clip than I perhaps would have initially expected if you'd explained it to me beforehand. I found myself in the same sort of trap actually recently. Last week I was on the From the Rookery End podcast and I was asked a question about VAR and referees and stuff, and I could just feel myself saying it so far before I even said it. I just knew what was coming, and I in the end I had to say, oh well, I mean, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I do think generally it evens itself all out over time.
So this is the benefit of this podcast is that I as opposed to going on other podcasts in the Athletic stable where I have to express like, you know, serious opinions about football.
Yeah.
Whereas, not that this isn't serious, of course it is, but, you know, I you don't find yourself wandering down the VAR or the decisions even themselves out routes.
I'm now slightly worried, based on Dave's anecdote there, about what my threshold would be for uttering those words. I wait to see if I'm ever on a serious podcast ever again. Couldn't ignore this. Have to tackle this. It's Dean Saunders on TalkSport.
I'm sorry to say this. You know, there's a lot of imposters in football.
Go on.
You know, you see the dugout and you think, how many people he got on the bench? People got swallowed a laptop, sneaked into a club and come out with long words.
I tell you what gets me. I know there's a language barrier sometimes, but when the subs are about to go on and they get the board out or they get a bit of paper, oh, come on, just talk to them. Tell them what you want me to do. Honestly.
Listen to this, Al, right? This is how people have tried to baffle the fans. They're trying to baffle the public. Right, yeah. with long words that used to mean something simple. High press.
Oh, no, I know.
That
I
used
know.
To be closing down.
Yeah.
And full court press, that used to be. Low block, that used to be sit deep. You know, I've changed it to low block. Transition was giving the ball away and getting counter-attack. Don't give it away, lads. Mm. Transition, it's called now.
Keep the ball.
The player needs more minutes. Where's that come from? Just needs a game.
Got to play more.
Needs
yeah.
a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Dino.
People
I'm
just coming
you.
Out with ridiculous long words. Just trying to baffle the public to sound intelligent. Swallowed a laptop.
It would be easy, Dave, for us to react like everybody else and sort of, you know, reduce him to intellectual rubble. But I'm more interested in a kind of more meta level analysis of this, which is, why is it always high pressing that gets cited first here? Why is it such a big deal that the high press is considered such offensive jargon in football now?
I know.
And low block, conversely, is the number two as well. Once you've got those two out of the way, apparently it's fine.
Well, they're such a universal concept. I suppose they just come up so regularly. And, in a way, you can sort of... there is a very, very, very small part of me that sort of kind of sympathises with it. Because they are basically saying, look, we're not dinosaurs, we used to do this stuff too, but they just that is just not the right way to sort of make that point.
Mm.
Especially banging on about long words. All the words were of the same length, I think.
Yeah, that's perhaps sort of the lower hanging fruit of this, Nick, is that Saunders' main argument is that these are all really long words, and they actually came out with longer ways of explaining them, which I thought was, I think you could see it in his eyes halfway through that he realised what he was doing. I think that might be my favourite bit of it.
I think my favourite bit was the visual element, because he clearly had all these things written down on, you know, on his notepad or something like that, and he kept kind of looking down and going, what's this? Low block? Yeah, that one's just occurred to me as well.
Swallowed a laptop, Nick.
Yeah, and he was so delighted with it that he bookended the whole thing.
He was really happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. He thought of that line and, you know, was going to milk it for what it's worth.
That appears to be part of it as well. There is a smugness to this. It's about
kind of a cathartic thing for proper football men is to get this out. And after a while, you think, well, maybe we both kind of win here. Nothing's going to change, but you get to let this off your chest with a little quip, like laptop swallowing, and we all get with the life. But my semi-serious bugbear with this whole thing is that how can this still be a radio segment in 2023? They've done this. This has been done. How can this possibly be annoying you fresh?
I know. And I like the bit where Alan Brazil said the bit that annoys him is when they get the board out or a piece of paper on the touchline and tell people what to do. Now, I worked with Alan Brazil on that breakfast show for about 4 years and had a great time. And Alan is an amazing broadcaster at times. But let me tell you, he needed bits of paper.
A laminated folder telling him when
just,
the ad break
we didn't is. Just get, we didn't just pull him 5 minutes before he went on air and go, Alan, right, just tell him the whole four-hour show in 30 seconds and say, off you go.
Yeah, it's all based on lies, Nick, as well. Like these sort of counter-arguments, they go too far and actually, well, that's just not true, is it? And then it all ends up into a complete mess. But I don't know. I don't think anyone's the real winner here, are they?
No. Are we losers for even paying attention to it? I'm not sure. You know,
yeah. Who's to say? There is an aspect of that. I do feel sucked into it, I have to say, but I couldn't ignore it. Anyway, Charlie Reese writes in, Dave, and says, I work for Lidl. I asked a customer if he had one of our Lidl Plus reward cards, to which he replied, I don't have one for my sins. Is missing out on a fake Weetabix 10% discount sinful? This is one of the most tenuous ones we've ever had.
Yeah, bloody hell. I do have those moments when you're at Tesco or Sainsbury's or wherever. No Lidl's near me. You do think, I should have one. Should I have one? Why haven't I got one? I'm never going to get one.
If we're kind of accepting the notion that a supermarket can be for my sinsy, what's the most for my sinsy supermarket, do you think?
No, I think the higher up you go.
Higher up you go?
I think,
what, you're talking Waitrose?
Yeah, I think if you're a Waitrose Plus member, that's a for my sins.
Right.
Because I think it's...
Implication being that if you can afford to shop at Waitrose, you don't need the reward points kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's not how Waitrose cards work, I can reveal.
Years.
I mean, yeah.
There you go.
You scan your card every time, but they're... Up until very recently, there was absolutely no rewards to it whatsoever. You might get the odd coffee, but now they've started introducing personalised vouchers. So I can reveal that there is now some tangible benefit to having a Waitrose card. I think we should move swiftly on from there because that leads us in to For My Sins Corner. Nick, you're a For My Sins Corner relative veteran. You know how it works. I'm going to play a clip from popular culture. Someone involved is going to say the words For My Sins, as they are now legally obliged to do on the BBC. This is from BBC Two quiz show Eggheads. Dave, you know the drill. Just shout the words when you think it's going to be uttered.
The next subject is sport. Maybe that's perfect. Who wants this?
Great.
I think that's me, isn't it?
Rob, okay. Against which egghead? And it can be Beth or Judith or Barry.
Judith.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Sorry. It's not a foregone conclusion.
No,
is that just...
Trust me, it is.
It's the gesture.
So Robert from Doing It for the Crack to take on Judith on one of her favourite subjects, sport. To ensure there's no conferring, please take your positions. So, Judith, sport again?
Sport again.
And at school, you were a lacrosse person?
I was. I was in the team.
For my
and
sense.
I played on the wing.
And how about you, Robert? What do you enjoy?
I'm a football fan, soccer. I'm a Manchester United fan for my sins. and I used to play a bit of football, which is an Irish...
Did you get in there in time, Dave? I couldn't quite make it out.
No, I didn't even... Well, I didn't even say it for a start. But I was too late.
I tried to be too clever. It's the most basic example of the For My Sins, and I thought
lacrosse would lure you in. The more inexperienced of the two, I thought you might crack first on eggheads.
I've wandered straight into a colossal bear trap.
Lacrosse and Waitrose on the Football Clichés podcast. not a good start for our working class credentials. Next up, we've kind of visited this phenomenon on and off, Dave, on this podcast. It's local radio co-commentary. Now, the thing about local radio co-commentators, as we've established before, is that there's no impartiality asked or given. They're loose cannons almost by profession, almost by definition, aren't they?
Yeah. I think I think there's an inherent sort of understanding that it's all a bit more of a low pressure environment when you're on that, when you're a local radio co-commentator. And also, without being disrespectful, genuinely, they will basically get anyone on.
How could that possibly
what be? A little precursor that was.
No, I mean, honestly, that I mean, it
how
is.
Could that
what
not
happens.
Be disrespectful?
I've got, mate, I've got, obviously, I know people who have literally got no, absolutely no connection to football whatsoever, apart from being a fan of that club, who have found themselves co-commentating on BBC local radio on real matches.
It's like, it's the club ambassador job, Nick, for someone who just can't be asked with small talk. I can't do that. Give me something else. Local radio? Yeah, sure. No problem. But so, yeah, so they have a kind of diplomatic immunity to be as partisan as they want, and that's fine. Yeah. Nobody expects any different. But this is brilliant. This was sent to me from football commentator James Fielden, who's listening to BBC Radio West Midlands coverage of some recent Walsall games. And they packaged some of the recent goals together in a little highlights bit. And it's not really the partisan co-commentating as such. It's just the slightly inappropriate way that he greets these two goals.
Now here's Tom Knowles. Knowles takes a touch and finds the net. Tom Knowles has scored for the Saddlers. Hutchinson does well to get away from four and lets another shot. Isaac Hutchinson is there for the Saddlers.
I am completely 50-50, Nick, about which of those is my favourite. The second one is like it's the first football goal he's seen in his entire life. Wow! They kicked the ball into the net. But the first one has kind of got a kind of weird cheesy coolness about it, so I'm not sure which one I like.
I think my instinct was that, like you say, this is the first time he's ever seen a goal scored in football, and he doesn't react like other football fans. Yeah. But you kind of, now I'm doubting myself as to what other football fans sound like, because you only ever hear, like, goal celebrations, you only ever hear in the collective. It's just this sort of massive noise. You don't hear the individual bits.
That's true.
Maybe that is how people react. I mean, it isn't, but, you know, I've been doubting myself anyway.
Dave, what kind of Watford goal would it take for you to simply say wow? Like, actually just be wowed verbally?
I mean, literally any goal.
Oh, come on. Ooh, long suffering. I'll take anything. But yeah, just in a really weird kind of way, a very, very special example of local radio co-commentary. Enjoyed this. But nothing is going to beat this for this particular football cliches running theme. This came from Chiro Norme. I'm not even going to tell you what happens. It's a video about chalk that mathematicians use.
Mathematicians from all the top schools very frequently use it.
It's a cult favorite.
As soon as I used it, I was a convert.
The chalk is one of the best kept secrets in the math world.
It's the Rolls Royce of chalk.
Yeah!
The Rolls Royce of chalk!
Lovely. The deep satisfaction of knowing exactly what was coming and it finally arriving. Lovely.
I mean, that video, in all its glossiness, Dave, does go some way to convincing me that there is a possibility that a chalk can be Rolls-Royce-y. Very nice branding on the site. It's Japanese-made.
What's the chalk they used to have at school in the yellow and green package? Was that Crayola?
Yeah, I would have imagined so.
But chalk is quite sort of, it's a traditional sort of thing, isn't it? Not newfangled in any way. Surprised that anyone is still using chalk. So it kind of, it does sort of have a Rolls-Royce-y sort of traditionalism to it.
You couldn't have like the Rolls-Royce of a board marker than like a whiteboard marker.
Yeah.
Same.
Probably not.
I'd want the Rolls-Royce-ing in the eraser, if anything. I want that to do its job better.
Yeah.
Like markers
are effortlessly just rubbing, leaving no trace, just taking care of business, roaming around the blackboard.
I mean, as the universe of Rolls-Royce products kind of expands, Nick, I suppose on reflection, you know, high-level mathematicians probably do want a Rolls-Royce of chalk. Can you imagine how fussy they are about their equipment?
Oh, yeah.
And the slide rules and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, you're going to want a good chalk. And apparently this is the best kept secret in mathematics.
Yeah, we need to know who the kind of, what the sort of mainstream brand of chalk is now. This
couldn't imagine.
Luxury style has been given to us.
Yeah.
I think what we're increasingly seeing here is that Rolls-Royce themselves should actually diversify their business. Make chalk. Make other stuff.
Yeah, classy centre halves, Rolls Royce.
That reminds me, I was on holiday a few years ago and sat down to breakfast, and the salt and pepper shaker and its holder were manufactured by Peugeot.
Wow, what? There you go.
Peugeot salt and pepper shaker. Why do you need to do that, lads?
Well, just in case the bottom falls out of the car market, they're protecting themselves.
Yeah,
and they clearly thought everyone is always going to need salt and pepper.
That's their nest egg, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, Hagoromo Chalk, hopefully the forthcoming sponsor of the Football Clichés podcast. After that, at least, going to dedicate a whole section to this. It's Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0. First up, Dave. This came from Bill Al Ali. Entirely separate from the scoreline, really, but still nonetheless worthy of our comment. This is Conor McNamara outing his gantry partner Jim Beglin as a member of a splinter footballing union, I guess.
Well, Jim, you're a fully paid up member of the left backs cutting in on their right for a shot. Union?
Oh, come on.
Members include who?
Conor McNamara knows exactly what he's doing there. As a man who listens to this show and has been on this show, come on.
Jim Beglin in a really dusty hall somewhere, Nick, just reading the minutes out to himself. Is Steve Guppy coming? Not sure. No, he can't make it today.
And does Steve Guppy actually qualify, since he was primarily a wing-back?
Yeah,
so,
I know.
I know. Disputed membership.
But once you've narrowed it down, you're fucked, aren't you?
Dennis Irwin? He's probably the chairman, isn't he?
A Rolls Royce of a member of that particular union. But yeah, great stuff. And as Dave suspects, Nick, McNamara there knows what he's doing. Excellent. Next up, I'm really glad someone asked this, because we've talked about this on the podcast before, Dave, and I don't think we quite nailed the hypothetical scenario for it. But now we have a real life case study. T-Boss says, Salah's first goal was described on Five Live as being lashed. Does it meet the threshold? It totally meets the threshold. It's a great lashing. In off the bar with his weaker foot, his so-called weaker foot, his self-styled, self-appointed weaker foot. First time, bouncing ball, in off the bar. No design, essentially, other than to get it goalwards. And it looked brilliant. It's a lashing all day long.
100%. And I think the fact that De Gea sort of dived for it, it was sort of passed him before he dived, the whole thing, there was a rawness to it. There was a sort of an absolute lack of any sort of culture or deftness.
Without sort of sacrificing any kind of aesthetic quality, though. It wasn't a miss hit, it wasn't a bobble. It was that's why lashings are so good, Nick. There is no aplomb involved, but they can be quite devastating.
Would we also accept snapshot for that one? Because it was kind of slightly unexpected, as outlined before, hit with some kind of with power without.
I'd say it was too much of a good chance. Like if he hadn't scored, it would have been considered a golden opportunity. Whereas snapshots are more not half chances, maybe sort of 75% chances, somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Snapshots are indeed first time hits. So I see where you're going with that. Love this though. This came from Harry Green, Nick. Martin Tyler and Peter Drury having a little bake off over Roberto Firmino scoring the seventh goal for Liverpool.
Oh, that's the run they wanted. That is the cherry on the icing on the cake. Gakpo 2, Nunez 2, Salah 2, Firmino to put the cherry on the icing on the richest of Liverpool cakes.
Drury just had to add a little extra flourish. His own personal cherry.
Is there anything that goes on top of the cherry? There isn't really, is there? Sprinkles?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Maybe could you have something stuck into it?
Yeah,
like in a decorative sense.
Maybe if it's some sort of Christmas themed cake, you got those little thick bits of edible holly that go on.
Yeah.
The cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. What sort of sprinkles? Do they supersede the cherry, or is cherry always king, both figuratively and literally?
It's probably always king, because it's just one main thing, isn't it? As if it's sprinkles, then they're just kind of smaller things distributed around the rest of the cake. But the cherry's the sort of centrepiece, isn't it?
I mean, you don't really see many cherries on cakes these days, do you?
That's true.
It's more of a Bakewell tart situation.
Yeah.
Is that not a cake? It's a tart, isn't it?
Yeah, we can call it a cake if you want, but you know what I mean. I don't think you see many sort of
Waitrose sponges with ice
with cherries on. But
Drury's got form for this, though. Maybe he is the more experienced in the cake analogy between the two. Here he is back in 1999, I believe, Chelsea versus Galatasaray.
And why wouldn't he? This is icing on a cake so rich as to be thoroughly, thoroughly palatable for those who've travelled from Chelsea.
You want it to be a bit more than just palatable, don't you?
So rich as to be thoroughly palatable.
We're also witnessing the evolution of Drury there as a more high-class operator, because there was definite hesitancy in that, as well as saying a rich gate was palatable.
Which had been halfway through that, he thought, God, in 20 years, people are going to be sick of this.
Well, no, but these days, there's much more certainty. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Whereas that was much more tentative back then.
And it's paid off, to be fair to him. It's paid off.
Tony Evans here, host of Walk On, the Athletic's new look Liverpool podcast. 7-0. Seven. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's what Jürgen's boys can do. And to Manchester United, is that the game to ignite the Reds' running? Well, we hope so. Join myself, James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones as we get stuck into Liverpool sticking it to United. Mo Salah's record-breaking afternoon, as well as bringing you the best post-match analysis around. Just search Walk On wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Next up, willing to factor in some sort of language barrier here, no issue there, but this came from Kevin, who was enjoying Bruno Fernandes's honest take after the game with Sky Sports, but took issue with one very specific aspect of it.
After the final, when everyone was happy, that is, it was really good to be a Red Devil. It's still really good to be a Red Devil because a part of the results, it will always be good to be a Red Devil because we have set a good and really good standard for ourselves.
I mean, it is unusual, Dave, to hear players referring to their club nickname, but I think it's the extra twist here is that he's using it as a singular, which really, really rams it home as very jarring. Do you think it's one of the most jarring club nicknames in the Premier League to use as a singular?
I've never heard it used like that before. On occasion, I think I've heard sort of Watford players speak of themselves as a Hornet, proud to be a Hornet.
But only in sort of unveiling sort of videos and stuff. Just to drop it into a post-match interview. No matter how much kind of fronting up you feel like you need to do, I do find it quite strange. Nick, I feel like it's incumbent on us to go through the entire list of Premier League club nicknames and decide which one works least well as a singular. Gunner? I feel like...
That's fine, I think.
You'd go for Gooner in the singular, wouldn't you?
I think
a Gooner, is specifically an Arsenal fan. I don't think you'd describe an Arsenal player as a Gooner.
Yeah, I think they would be co-opted.
There are people that span both. You're Ian Wright, for example. He could be a Gooner.
But let's please stick to the original context provided by Bruno Fernandes. Would an Aston Villa player say that this performance wasn't worthy of being a villain?
It feels weird, doesn't it?
Yeah. a cherry. Back to cherries again. Cherries is plural. I've got my head around, Dave, but I don't think I like cherry singular.
No.
Yeah, I don't feel like a cherry today. Not proud to be a cherry.
That's not what it means to be a cherry.
It's not the cherry way.
Would you like to be a bee at Brentford? Again, very plurally one.
What about a tricky tree at Nottingham Forest, Nick?
No, that doesn't...
That's secondary, isn't it?
That does sound quite silly.
Seagull, a blue, an eagle, a toffee. Yeah, it's a bad day to be a toffee. Actually, no, Grey would use toffee, wouldn't it? But yeah. Again, it's for the fans. Cottager.
Well, yeah. Citizen is weird. It'd be weird.
Yeah.
Or as they have tended to try and spell it these days, citizen.
Yeah.
With a
bad day to be a citizen, Pep. Anyway, yeah, magpie, red, saint. Yeah.
Fox.
Yeah.
A wolf.
Give him a minute. Let's give him
a wolf.
A wolf. Well, there we are. A wolf. Let's give Fernandez the benefit of the doubt. It was a chastening evening for all involved in Red Devilry. Last point on this game came from Jamie Nagyoff. He says, lots of talk this morning about whether Liverpool will now pip Spurs to fourth place. But what is the threshold for pip? I think this is quite strictly deployed, Nick. I think pipping needs to be point or two. I suppose you could have three because you could have been level at the start of the final day. And it has to be right at the end of the season. You pip them right at the end. You weren't ahead of them at any meaningful stage towards the business end. So you pip them. You essentially leapfrog them, but in a very tight way, and it's a pipping.
Could you not pip someone if it was a kind of back and forth tussle, like if teams were swapping places, you know, third and fourth or whatever, you pip someone to third
is that
place.
In the spirit of pipping though, because you were technically ahead of them half of the time. Doesn't feel like pipping.
Yeah, I think the purest form of pip is come from behind, and that season where Spurs lost like 5-0 to Newcastle on the last day. They were pipped to fourth place by Arsenal.
Am I overplaying this sort of reducing the deficit coming from behind out of nowhere, Dave? Can it be an ongoing tussle?
No, I think that's good, because I think, is this not a horse racing thing? When you pip someone to the post.
Pip to the post,
and,
yeah.
And that, you know, that sort of horse just coming from the pack, emerging as they're coming up the hill at Cheltenham, for example, and just pip someone on the line. I think that's the kind of... That's what I think of. And in the footballing context, yeah, that would be a team that just makes a late surge into the playoffs or the top four and just gets there at the last.
And are you happy with the maths, Dave? 3 points maximum is a pipping.
I think if you overtake someone on the last day, it's fine.
Okay.
But whether it's goal difference, whether it's by 3 points, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, it comes down to one result, one swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Next up, Nick, being increasingly accustomed to seeing this phrase and variations of it in wider society used quite knowingly, almost acknowledging its football origin. But I think in this case, I don't think it's being used ironically. I think it's being used perfectly innocently in the wider world. Sphagnum Moss has written in, and he's reading a very entertaining Guardian article about the rise of indie music in the early 2000s. And lots of voices in there, one of which was Victoria Hesketh of Little Boots, formerly of Dead Disco, the ex-Dead Disco ace. And here's what she had to say. It was a good place to start. There was no bullshit and you had to get your hands dirty. You had to drive to play Club NME in Stoke on a Tuesday and get drunk dudes shouting at you. You had to earn your stripes, especially for girls, because they had to give as good as the boys. Whether or not it's a good thing, it's how I came up. It definitely made me resilient. Club NME in Stoke on a Tuesday. Tough place to go. Surely she didn't deliberately use Stoke. Maybe she did.
It's trickier in a club, which I'm going to assume is indoors, to get the elements into it.
Could be drafty.
It could be drafty. That's more of a sort of structural issue than the weather, isn't it?
Am I getting this right, Dave? Club NME is a movable feast, isn't it?
I think
you could host Club NME anywhere.
I think so. I don't think there was just one in Stoke.
Oh, right.
The mecca for NME fans.
Just like the rain will move around, as does Club NME. Yeah.
Can I propose a slight conspiracy theory here? Do you think there's a playful sub-editor having a bit of fun with this? Did she really say Tuesday in Stoke?
Could have just said it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
It's been a bad week for journalism, and now you're turning the screw even further on journalistic malpractice. On a similar vibe, this came from Adam Simpson, who was reading an article, Nick, about Ian Dowie's latest career change. A career change it might be, but he still can't help but talk like a footballer. Here it goes. Ian recently gave it all up for a completely new career as a mortgage advisor at a Lancashire law firm. Alexander Grace Law, based near Burnley, has taken me on as a business director leading its remortgaging team. Ian's wife Debbie also works at the company's office near Preston, he told the Daily Star. While people may wonder how I've gone from the football pitch to the office, I have been working within the conveyancing arena for some 4 years now. And when I was asked if I would come on board with them, it was a no-brainer.
Yes!
Yes! There was only one place he was going to go. Of course he was. His wife works there.
It can't possibly be a no-brainer. You're a Premier League footballer.
Now you're working for Alexander Grace Law, based near Burnley, leading its remortgaging team. It doesn't sound like a no-brainer.
That was his childhood remortgaging team, I understand.
a noble profession, I'm sure, but that's absolutely no way that was a no-brainer. Are we suspecting some kind of mischievous sub-editor who's just weaved that
another
in?
Another one.
I know. We're pointing fingers all at the journalism industry all over the place here, but I mean,
no, I don't think this one. I think you can 1,000% see Dowie saying this.
Yeah, I guess
definitely.
So.
Is remortgaging technically a bounce back ability situation? I suppose it is. Right, seasoned football cliches listeners will of course remember early era classic gets the shot away. For anyone who isn't familiar with this was a Serie A based phenomenon in which one commentator sounded like he was angling for a part in Les Mis.
Federico Chiesa gets the shot away. Success once more. Gets the shot away.
And we had so much fun with this, didn't we, Dave? Not to mention someone writing in with their audio skills and actually dubbing that over a clip of Les Mis.
Before these schoolboys, they will wet themselves with blood.
Watch them run amok.
Gets the shot away.
Never know your luck when there's a free for all. Here's a little dip.
They're a little touch.
Most of them are gone, so they won't miss much.
It's a Hall of Famer moment, isn't it, Dave? The gets the shot away.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly.
We've waited a long time, Nick, for a kind of natural successor to gets the shot away, and I think we might just have found it. It came from listener Greg, who was listening to Liverpool versus Real Madrid on BBC Radio 5 Live. And here is John Murray sounding like he's singing Volare by the Gypsy Kings.
Benzema back to Modric, 25 yards out, into the edge of the area, Rodrigo, and then Valverde!
It comes across loud and clear. Can we have it one more time?
Benzema back to Modric, 25 yards out, into the edge of the area, Rodrigo, and then Valverde!
Whoa! Valverde!
Whoa!
He plays for Real Madrid!
Yes,
it works, nonetheless. Valverde! Wonderful stuff. I mean, once I'd got over the superficial enjoyment of it, Nick, it did make me think, and I still haven't watched it back, that chance itself. That particular intonation from a commentator, what kind of chance does it suggest? It's very snapshotty, isn't it? Like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think it's snapshotty, but it's gone quite a long way over the bar, or got a long way wide.
Good. Yeah, I agree. It's weird because there's two elements to it, isn't there, Dave? There's kind of the unexpectedness of the shot, which is kind of reflected in the exclamation. But then there's that kind of the way that the tone takes off also suggests that it wasn't miles wide, but it was safely wide or high.
I'm thinking like an unexpected, sort of like an early cross that's found him at the back post or something.
Right.
And the commentator's maybe just taken a little bit off guard. Mm. Maybe they were chatting about something else before and it just... But then for a second they think certain goal, but then becomes clear that it isn't.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Really is. He gets the shot away of 2023. Now, Bakary Lasagna writes in, Nick, and says, what are your conditions for restoring the lead? For me, it feels like the goal needs to be scored fairly soon after the equaliser, but also not too late in the game. So he's using the example of Everton going 2-1 up against Nottingham Forest at the City Ground on Sunday, because it was relatively soon after Forest had equalised in the grand scheme of the game. But it was soon enough for the phrase to reflect the fact that there might, you know, it's an ongoing situation. If you restored your lead on a technical level in the 92nd minute, then you couldn't call it that, could you? You couldn't call it that. So what's the cut-off point?
I think the definition there is pretty spot on. I'm going to say, what, it's 80 minutes too late? Maybe 75? Restored the lead? I think that is too late, actually.
Maybe the lateness of the goal, Dave, gets overridden by the fact that if the goal that came before it was was so close. If a goal, if a goal was scored in the 82nd and then the team retook the lead in the 83rd, you could still say restore the lead then and not have to worry about it sort of interfering with the final scoreline and the final few minutes. So maybe it's proximity of the goal rather than the lateness.
I agree. I think that's the key thing. Yeah. It's how close the goals come.
How late could you go? Could you go like 92 and then 93?
But then I suppose you could like restore an old property hundreds of years after it was originally made. So.
Yes, you can. Absurd levels of literally, Dave, there. Thank you. Thank you for the putting the cherry on the icing on the cake there. Now, I thought we'd exhausted all options for this, Nick. We debated recently on this podcast, and this is a very Soccer Saturday-y thing, about whether the phrase nil all was acceptable. Where do you stand on this?
I mean, it feels clunky, but I don't think it's entirely unacceptable.
I find it too breezy, too conversational. Dave, where did you stand on this before?
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? Well, you might not like this then. I have to say, I don't have the audio for this. I can't corroborate its existence. But Chris Warne has the name of a man that I would trust. And here he says, 33 minutes into Chelsea versus Leeds on Soccer Saturday, Michael Dawson ended his update with, still nil none.
Oh, you can't. No, you can't mix and match.
Nil none.
But none none sounds awful as well.
None none. I don't think I've ever heard none none.
Nothing nothing you can get away
with. Nothing nothing's fine. Does none have any place in this at all? Three none. That doesn't sound none. Great, does it?
No, I'm not keen on it. It sounds a little bit old fashioned, but nil none. I mean, the only thing worse would be to switch them round, Nick, and say none nil.
Weirdly, that sounds better, but still not good. But,
yeah, still none nil, Jeff. Oh.
You can't have the nil second. It sounds too close to one nil.
Yeah, it does. But the rhythm of it is at least better than nil none. Nil none. Still nil none. Sounds like some skullduggery going on there. More quick thinking. Elsewhere this weekend, this was the Women's League Cup final on the BBC, and friend of the show Robin Cowan was taking a very effective approach to emphasising Sam Kerr's goal tally for Chelsea this season.
Goal number 22 for Sam Kerr this season. And we're still in Greenwich Mean Time.
Yeah, that to me is not an obscure enough reference for it to be unhelpful, and it nails the time of the year. And as someone, Nick, who doesn't really know when Easter is, ever, despite having experienced many Easters. Greenwich Mean Time means more to me, I think, as a benchmark.
Well, it kind of serves a dual purpose, because it does, there is an indication of the time of year, and I can never remember when GMT flips over either. So it also reminds me, oh, that's probably quite soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, spring forward, fall back. I sort of laud the approach here, but I do. I think if I'd heard this in the wild, it would have taken me a little couple of seconds to work out exactly what.
Oh, there's a classiness, there's a poise to it.
No, I like it. I'm the one failing.
Oh,
here.
It's you, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not Robin, it's you. But I would go further, Nick, and I'm all for the clocks going forward as being the official start of the business end of the season.
Oh, well, I mean, you are going to have to remind me when the clocks go forward, but it sort of sounds right.
Would they ever have mentioned it on Premier League Years? And the clocks went forward this Sunday.
That's not going to go on Premier League Years. Happens once a year. It's there every time.
But moving backwards down the table.
They're really struggling for news. The clocks went forward in March.
It's Sunday, March the 26th.
Oh, right.
About right to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels a little bit too early for the business end. Okay. I don't know.
Coincides roughly with the sort of quarterfinals of the Champions League.
I think it is, because we're nearly in the Championship. Watford have got 11 games to go in the Championship.
Well, yeah, that's
so
a run-in.
Time 26 comes around, yeah.
Anything under 12 is officially a run-in, comfortably. So maybe it does work. Let's take this Easter nonsense out of the equation, because no one remembers when that is. Talking about constants in our life, it's time for Keys in Grey Corner. Now, I had to try and boil down a weekend of Keezy into one kind of focal point. And it seems like he's moved on from Mikel Arteta's extracurricular, extra-technical area activities. Despite him almost abducting a child at the weekend, Nick.
Well, he sort of very quickly ushered the child into, to presumably towards a, some kind of responsible adult, high-fived the child, then realised, well, hang on, what the fuck is this kid doing here?
Incredible quick thinking, Marteta, and rightly so. Good stuff. Yeah. To, the high-five came first, but then suddenly thought, where's your dad?
Yeah.
Where's your legal guardian? It was inside his technical area by the looks of it, so...
I think it was, yeah.
Within his rights to turf him out, but I believe they were reunited... later on, but yeah, sensational scenes at the Emirates, indeed. But no, Keyes's got a new nemesis, a new bete noire, a new punching bag, and it's this guy.
Be to my previous comments regards Weghorst.
Yes? Why?
No idea. Absolutely no idea.
You know the answer.
Has he not got a few questions to answer about his starting 11 and about, sorry to keep mentioning it, but... Wout Weghorst? What's he doing at Old Trafford?
His starting 11 have saved
him
well.
He's a bang ordinary centre-forward playing at number 10. He has to take a look at himself tonight and say, hang on, he's got a kid on the bench to pay 80 million quid for. Yeah.
No, yeah. No,
and he's got this fella trolleying about at number 10.
I just don't want to sit here.
Is there a single broadcaster in the known English-speaking universe, Dave, that would use the phrase trolleying about?
Oh, it's vintage stuff, isn't it? Superb. And as we've been increasingly commenting on in recent times, he's kind of on the money, really.
Yeah. Well,
he is. But to go on about an underperforming striker when a team's just been spanked 7-0 is pretty classic Keyes, really.
Well, if that's his bugbear, he's going to run with it, as we know. But yeah, poor Wout Weghorst, Dave. Keyes very much smelling blood here. Sees someone playing for a big club out of their comfort zone and he won't let it go. Won't let it go at all.
Normally you'd think he's the sort of player that Keyes would like. Mm. What about Weghorst? Get him in.
Big man.
Big man.
Not as a number 10, let's face it. I mean, from a whole spectrum of proper football men, from Dean Saunders to Richard Keyes, is not going to accept Wout Weghorst playing as a deep-lying false something or other. Anyway, the words are too long, Nick. I can't handle it. Nick, thank you very much for joining us on the Adjudication Panel. It's been great to have you back.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks for everyone for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.